Hi, this is Ibby Owens, and you're listening to the award-winning podcast, Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. I'm also the host of Moms Don't Have Time to Lose Weight, and I'm the editor of the anthology, which you should run out and buy, called Moms Don't Have Time To, a quarantine anthology. All proceeds of that book go to COVID-19 vaccine research. And I'm the editor-in-chief of Moms Don't Have Time to Write, a new publication on Medium, and we're accepting submissions, so please send your personal essays there. And if all that isn't enough, you can follow me on Instagram at Zibby Owens, and my website is zibbyowens.com. Okay, now back to this amazing podcast. I am obsessed with Slumberkins. They're these collections of stuffed animals and lovies that come with books. And they're so much more than that. Slumberkins were developed by a therapist and an educator using research-based techniques to help teach children how to understand and support their feelings. So these are almost emotional intelligence teaching animals. My kids are just obsessed. I mean, they fight over all of these things so much. And each one comes with a book. And in the book, you do things like recite your feelings and learn about different emotions. There's the caring crew of animals, the confidence crew. There's the resilience crew. It's really amazing. They have great gifts for newborn parents. And they're giving my listeners and followers Zibby 10% off your first purchase. The code is Zibby10. So go to slumberkins.com. Check it out. Your kids will love them, and you will love the fact that they help kids fall asleep better. They create an activity that you can do with your kids, reading, reciting. They even have like digital books that you can do as activities with your kids. I am just such a huge fan of this brand and what it does for families and how it will help kids, and also the fun that it brings into the household. So go to Slumberkins, code Zibby10 will get you 10% off your first purchase. Enjoy! Lynn Berger is the author of Second Thoughts on Having and Being a Second Child. Lynn is a staff writer at Dutch journalism platform De Correspondent, which is probably not how I pronounce that properly, but whatever, where she covers keywords and everyday culture. She holds a PhD in communications from Columbia University and lives in Amsterdam, the Netherlands. Welcome, Lynn. Thank you so much for coming on Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books to discuss your book, Second Thoughts on Having and Being a Second Child.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's a pleasure. And I think this is my first podcast with someone in the Netherlands, I have to say.
Well, I'm glad to be a first on something.
Although my future mother-in-law, who just is engaged to my husband's dad, she is also from the Netherlands.
So oh, really?
I get your accent around us very often.
Ah, good.
Just in case you're wondering. Anyway, okay, Second Thoughts on Having and Being a Second Child. Tell listeners what made you decide to do this. And I know you write about it in the book and how your sort of quest for knowledge and research and debunking some myths about second children and got you on your way. But tell us the full story, please.
Okay, yeah. So Second Thoughts is a work of nonfiction about what it means to have a child for the second time and also what it means to be a second child. And the reason I wrote it, or how it came about, is that so I'm a journalist. I've also been in academia for a long time. So I'm a writer. That's what I do. But I think first and foremost, I'm a reader. So, I mean, I love reading. I always have. And I often find it helpful, you know, to go to the literature to help me make sense of whatever it is that's going on in my life. So when I became a mother for the first time, I read everything I could find about the transition to parenthood, about taking care of babies, fiction, nonfiction, self-help, literature, you name it. And I found it really helpful just to use that to think through this transformative experience. So then fast forward a couple of years, I'm pregnant again. And I had all these new questions like, well, if that first experience of becoming a parent was transformative, then what does it mean to have that experience again? But also, what will it mean for our daughter to become a big sister, for our future son to, you know, to be a second child? So I figured, well, I'll just go and read up on it. And then, you know, I couldn't find anything. I found a couple of really practical and helpful parenting manuals on, you know, preventing sibling rivalry, but they were very hands-on. And I could find stacks and stacks of academic papers by sociologists, economists, psychologists about, I don't know, about the influence that siblings have on each other, about family formation, about the history of family life. But what I couldn't find was a book that would sort of synthesize all of that in a way that was accessible and open and curious, but also just, you know, personal and nice to read. And I really wanted to read a book like that. And so then I thought, well, if I want something like that, surely there must be other parents who are expecting a second child who would like to read something like that as well. And so, yeah, I ended up writing it myself.
Sort of an accidental book.
Yeah.
Like, you might as well use all the research. And I have to say, you accomplished that in such exactly what you set out to do, because I love how you interwove all your own stories and how most chapters begin with some anecdote from your own life or your child or the development. I feel like I was with you on your journey from, you know, finding out when you got pregnant to, you know, dealing with your son and worrying perhaps about the different developmental timelines, which every parent of multiple kids has worried about. I am going to just say that. Maybe I'm wrong, but I'm going to make that assumption. Anyway, so I love how you, so it's not just prescriptive, it's a narrative. So it made it really fun.
Thank you.
And I am out of the, I actually never really had a second child because I had twins to start with.
Oh, wow.
But I loved how you talked about the assumption that everybody thinks you're having, not everybody, but many people feel they're having the second child to benefit the first child.
Yeah.
And yet it can also be the worst thing ever for the first child.
Yeah, exactly.
You had some quote, you said, the assumption, for instance, that a child is better off without a brother or sister than without, but also that with the arrival of the second, we were not just giving our first child something, we were taking something away as well. And there was the assumption that our second, who would never experience the exclusivity of which we were about to deprive the first, would start out with a 1-0 disadvantage. Second place, consolation prize, runner up.
Aw, yeah. I felt really bad for our second child before he was even born.
Aw.
But yeah, it's a strange thing, right? When you ask people why they decided to become parents, like, the answers are so varied. It goes from, well, I was just really curious, or I always saw myself as a parent, or I just really wanted to know what it was like, or it's just nature. But then when you ask people why did they have a second child, it's almost always the answer is so that the first one would have a sibling. And it suddenly, so I mean, it was the same for us. But then when I was pregnant with the second child, I was like, but wait a minute. Why do we believe it's good for kids to have siblings? And what about all these horror stories about, you know, sibling rivalry and competition? And when did we come to think that this is so important?
And you even had a study that I'd love you to describe a little more that showed how your sibling relationship was, like, as a child affects the parenting and how you make your children get along later. Tell me a little bit more about that.
Yeah, that was a wonderful study. It's by Laurie Kramer, who's a developmental psychologist in the US. And she interviewed mothers of two children, and they themselves had also been part of a two-child family. And she asked the mothers sort of to reflect on their own sibling relationship. And so some of them said, well, it was all warm and lovely and fine. And some of the mothers had sort of, you know, a bit more difficult memories. They had fought a lot, or there had been a lot of rivalry. And so then she looked at the children of those mothers and how they were around each other. And she noticed that if the mother had had a good sibling relationship herself, then her children, their relationship was often less warm, less intimate, and had more arguments in it than the relationship of siblings whose mothers had bad memories of their own sibling experience. And so she realized that if your own sibling experience has been in whatever which way fraught, then you as a mother will try really hard to make the relationship between your children a good one. So you will help them to work through conflict and so on, rather than assuming that it's all going to be fine because it was fine for you. And I found it really amazing that sort of, you know, it was one of those moments where it clicked, like, oh yeah, you're not just parenting, you know, parenting doesn't start when you have a child. Like, it already started when you were a child.
Wow. So I was doomed to be the parent that I am today.
Is that right?
I don't know. Maybe so. Well, what was the upshot of your research? Did you find anything that really shocked you about what the benefits were of having second children?
So I would say that, you know, the findings in the science are pretty nuanced, as, you know, social science findings often are. So it turns out that, yeah, having a sibling can be really beneficial in a lot of ways. It can be, the siblings can influence each other's mental development, cognitive development, moral development. Having a sibling also provides a training ground for having arguments and working them out without, you know, just losing the other person right away. And also having a warm sibling relationship can be like it's like a buffer in times of stress. So for instance, when parents get a divorce, if the sibling relationship is fairly strong, then the kids often end up doing better than when the sibling relationship is not as good. On the other hand, when sibling relationships are not warm and intimate, they can also have, you know, sort of go together with rather bad effects for the kids in question. I mean, they can have more mental problems, more behavioral problems. So it's like, you know, it could go either way. And also sibling relationships can be really good training grounds for delinquent behaviors, which, you know, I mean, it makes sense. A bigger sibling can be an example for the good, but also for the bad. But then there were also a couple of things that really surprised me. And they had to do, for instance, with birth order. Mm-hmm. Because I had always assumed that I have a younger sister, that since I was the oldest, that sort of explained the fact that I was quite conscientious, a little bit neurotic. I always worked really hard in school, whereas my sister was more the social outgoing rebel. And I was sure, like, this is because of our birth order. And I also thought it was sort of advantageous for me to be the firstborn because, you know, it's just better to be the striving type A personality. And I'm sure people disagree with that. And I, you know, looking back, I think it's a bit of a strange assessment, but that's what I thought. But so then we were about to have a second child. And then I was like, but is that true? Does birth order really determine personality? And so I started reading up on the history. It's quite old, this idea, and on sort of the most recent findings. And they basically say there is no evidence that birth order shapes personality, even though so many of us believe that it does. But what it does determine for a lot of people is, But it does have an effect on other things than personality, including height and a likelihood of allergies, but also things like IQ and test scores in school. So there is, so where you're placed in the family line does have an effect on you, just not on personality, but on other things.
I'm a first child too, and I share your personality type, and I shared your assumptions for a long time. I find usually an immediate sort of common bond shorthand with other first children. You just kind of get that mentality. And, you know, I've actually come to believe, I think third children really, really have won the jackpot. I think third children are so well adjusted relative to the other two because, and like you point out in your book, your parenting for each subsequent child is what dictates so much of the development.
Yeah.
It's not the fact that their first children are less prone to allergies. It's the fact that you're so much more laid back about what you let the second children even do. So I don't know. I mean, anecdotally, it seems like birth order does play a role, but.
No, yeah, it does. And I feel the same. And everyone is like, but surely it must be true. But I think this is also, I read this one scientist who compared it to horoscopes, where once you believe that with a certain astrological sign come certain behaviors, that's what you recognize in other people. And you sort of filter out everything that's contrary to your assumptions. Hmm. But what also plays a role is that, you know, firstborns are often assigned different roles than secondborns. So they might be asked, you know, can you look after your brother? Or could you please help me? At least you're the oldest one. And so they might behave differently. But that behavior is not necessarily an expression of their personality, right? It's an expression of the role they've been given. So, yeah, and it's hard to disentangle behavior from personality. Hmm. But yeah, it's I still find it so fascinating.
Well, what is your astrological sign and how closely does it sort of jive with who you are?
So this is where the fact that I'm not a native English speaker comes in because I don't know the English word for my astrological
sign. When is your birthday?
It's April 26th. It's the end of April.
Oh, it's coming up.
Yeah.
Happy birthday. Yeah, thank exciting.
But what does that make me? It's Taurus. Taurus.
And what are the typical?
Yeah, they're meant to be stubborn. And oh. I do recognize that.
That's funny. Maybe I should start asking every guest what their astrological sign is. I could do my own study, actually. I could see if it's really true. I don't know. Anyway, my sample audience here. Awesome. So how are your kids getting along now?
Well, I think they're getting along fine for siblings. You know, I mean, their relationship is pretty warm. My daughter is now 7.5. My son is 4.5. They fight, but I think it's perfectly within reason and definitely a lot less than I used to fight with my sister. And I can, yeah, and the things I can really see sort of that I also read about in the research is that the oldest one is really training the youngest one. Like he's always looking up to his big sister and sort of copying her and trying to do the things she does. And the other way around, she obviously doesn't do that with him. So she's the teacher, he's the student.
I have that exact same thing with my little guys. I have a 7.5-year-old and a 6-year-old. And this morning he woke up and immediately like went to the bathroom right next to us, like in the bathroom, obviously, but he didn't close the door all the way. And so before they even said hello to each other, my 7.5-year-old daughter was like, ah, you didn't shut the door. And then kind of like pushed the door and was like, so, and I went over to her and I was like, how would you like it if like you woke up and the person who you looked up to most in the world was rude to you before you could even go to the bathroom and say good morning? Like, what kind of day does that set you up to have? Like, would you like that if you walked over to me and I immediately was rude to you? Like, no, you would probably then turn around and be rude to someone else and the whole world would be like a worse place, you know? But just because it's him, like, that doesn't mean you can do that. So anyway, I think she was finally like, okay.
But it's true. The relationship is so uneven, especially when they're young. It's just, there's always this age gap that also means a gap in power, in knowledge, in, you know, manipulative skills. It's really dramatic.
Yeah. I mean, imagine that you were always like, it would be like, you know, always being in class with someone who's like 2 or 3 grades ahead of you, like in everything you do, you'd always feel like you were behind. I was like young for my grade and I felt behind just by a couple months, you know.
Yeah.
a couple years. You must, anyway, well, oh well, so much for second children. We don't have to worry about them, I guess.
They'll be fine. In the end, they'll be fine.
Wait, tell me, you mentioned at the beginning that you love to read and that you've always loved to read. What kind of things do you love to read, and like what genre and what authors even, or when do you like to read?
Oh, it's all over the place. So I'm really into sort of the, you know, literary essayists. I quote some of them in the book. So for instance, Rachel Cusk, who wrote this beautiful book about becoming a mother, Zadie Smith, Leslie Jamison, all the sort of US and UK female essayists who rock. But then I also just love novels. You know, I'm happy with a 19th century novel. I'm happy with one that just came out. And I usually read at night, so before sleep. But I also read during the day, but that's for work because I'm a journalist, right? So I will read, you know, academic papers about family formation and stuff like that. But yeah.
And tell me more about your journalist work.
So I write for The Correspondent, which is an online journalism platform based in Amsterdam. And I cover care, but not health or not just healthcare, but care in general. So also informal care, like the care that parents give to children or that one might give to friends. And sort of my working thesis is that, you know, without care, society wouldn't exist. Like, we can't live without people taking care of us and us taking care of other people. So it's incredibly fundamental and at the same time, incredibly unappreciated, right? So you know, professional caretakers often don't make a lot of money. Parents have to squeeze care in between, you know, work, basically. So I'm trying to figure out how, you know, so what is it about care that makes it so important and yet so invisible? And what would we need in order to take proper care?
I love that. Is that your next book?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Yeah, stay tuned.
Okay, stay tuned. That sounds great. And such an important message. I mean, I feel like if anything, this past year has highlighted the need for that, especially when so many supports were ripped out from underneath so many people.
Yeah. Yeah, it does feel timely, which for a journalist is always nice.
Yeah. So what advice would you have for aspiring authors?
Well, what was really helpful for me in writing this book, which was my first book, was telling myself that I was writing a book and not the book. So it didn't have to include everything I had ever thought of. And that made it really easy to sort of make choices about what should and shouldn't go in. And as for the sort of practical everyday writing, so I had been doing research and making notes from the moment I was pregnant with my second child, basically. But then at some point I took some time off to really sit down and write it. And I would just, every week, I would just type up, you know, random disjointed paragraphs. And then at the end of the week, I would send them to my editor, who didn't read them and also didn't reply to them, but who still, because of this arrangement, made me feel like I was being held accountable. And so it was a really good motivation to just write something down every week. And then after, you know, a couple of months, I went back into my mail, found all those dispatches, printed them off and arranged them. And what emerged was like not a book, but something that could become a book. And that felt like it had written itself sort of in bits and pieces rather than through sort of concentrated hours and hours of writing. And I mean, yeah, it really depends on what kind of writer you are. But for me, that was really helpful.
That's great. This is such a random question. How did your family end up in Amsterdam? Like, how did you end up there?
Oh, I was born here, basically. And I studied in Maastricht, which is in the south of the country. And then I went to New York for a PhD and then met my partner while I was back in Amsterdam on summer break. Then he moved to New York with me. We had a blast and then figured that if we wanted to have children, we may prefer to have them close to our family. So we moved back. Yeah, I've been back here ever since.
Wow. Amazing. I don't know. I'm always so interested in how people end up all over the world. And anyway, random, as I said. Okay. All right. Well, Lynn, thank you so much. This has been really interesting. And your book was really interesting. And thanks for literally, I feel like you did a service for everyone else by, you could have easily left all that information, you know, on your desk and, you know, tucked away. And instead you decided to share it. So that's great. And now so many people can benefit, anybody who's thinking of having a second child. But I also just found this to be a very interesting sort of birth order. You know, I'm not about to have a child, but I found this super fascinating. So this really applies to lots and lots of people.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Well, take care. Maybe I'll see you in Amsterdam sometime.
That would be lovely. Okay. Have a lovely day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you, Slumberkins, for sponsoring today's episode. Again, use code ZIBBY10 to get 10% off your first purchase. Thanks for listening to this episode of Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. Don't forget to follow me on Instagram at Zibby Owens and at Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. Also, sign up for my newsletter at ZibbyOwens.com and sign up for my virtual book club and meet lots of authors on Zoom every other week. Thanks so much to Steve and Ryan at Texture Sound for the sound editing. And thank you to Morning Moon Productions for providing this fantastic intro and outro music.